let's see, brought to you by the CTV Society. Tonight, what the hell has been happening to my country? This is the beginning of at least two shows, possibly three shows on this topic. We're going to be looking at the film, The Big One, in relationship to Michael Moore's most recent book. If we could show that book on the stand.
Got no mic.
Yeah, well, it would help if I had my microphone, of course. It's cable TV. Tonight we're looking at Michael Moore, his film, The Big One, also his most recent book. Could we show the cover to his most recent book? Very recent. Written this past summer, out in the bookstores now. Dude, Where's My Country? If we could see that cover to that book on the stand. There it is, Michael Moore. Dude, Where's My Country? And, yeah, essentially, he's critiquing American politics from the point of view of everything that has happened since 9/11. Michael Moore certainly has had a lot of work that he's done in the film, The Big One, which was based on his own book tour, which was on Downsize This, the book that he had written at the time. That all goes back to 1996, the book tour and the film. And he was saying, well, what's happened to the country? So many people have been losing their jobs, not just in his hometown of Flint, but throughout the second-tier cities that he toured, also some major ones, Chicago. With me here tonight to talk about Michael Moore as a filmmaker and as an author of this most recent book, we have Rick Champla, my fellow member of the CTV Society. We have Stephen Durst, also a member of the Society. And we have Matthew Clark, one of our more recent members of the CTV Society. I'm Mark Zapatowski. I'm the moderator. And we're going to go right into this first clip, and we'll come back and we'll have our panelists talk about...
Can I read a one-sentence
statement
go ahead. Of what I think that the theme of Dude, Where Is My Country is from? This is what I think Michael Moore is saying in Dude, Where Is My Country, boiled down to one sentence. The Republican Party, using as an overblown excuse 9/11 in order to more viciously exploit workers and natural resources, and in order to reorder the liberal police state or nanny state into an illiberal police state, which I call the wicked stepmother state, is making such a ruthless drive for world hegemony and one-party rule and total corporate deregulation that, according to Michael Moore, we radicals must hold our noses and work and vote for Howard Dean or Wesley Clark or whoever emerges as the Democratic candidate, or the democracy is doomed and we workers are in for a dismal future as serfs under corporate feudalism, whether we live in communist China, occupied Iraq, or the USA. One world, one maquiladoro, everything for the few, squalor for the rest, the end of history in Fukuyama's sense of capitalist triumphalism. And I just want to ask my, I just want to thank my daughter for this birthday present. She made me a little activity book, and it's being put to good use.
All right, only one. This is from The Big One, 1996. Been directed by Michael Moore. We'll be back. Eventually, we'll have call-ins, too, so can we have sound out here? That's cool.
And it's about 6:15 in the morning here.
But it's a beautiful day. We're going to have a good day.
Let's get going.
No matter what city I was in, it was always the same 20 interviews with the same 20 questions.
Look at all this airtime you've been giving Whitewater, and how many millions has Congress spent trying to find out why just 7 people lost their jobs in the White House travel office, and not a dime has been spent investigating what happened to millions of Americans and their jobs.
Most of this welfare that we give corporations comes in the form of things like $1 million to McDonald's to help them promote Chicken McNuggets in Singapore. That's our tax dollars. Or the Pillsbury Company gets $11 million that goes to the Pillsbury Doughboy to be promoted in third world countries. With my interviews over, I told the escort we'd be back in a few hours. We headed out of the city to Centralia, Illinois, home of the Payday Candy Bar. People have been making paydays here for over 60 years. Back in 1992, Clinton visited Centralia on his first campaign for president.
My own state is full of places like Centralia, places where there are good people who work hard and play by the rules, who've been forgotten in George Bush's America. I want to tell you something. It doesn't have to be this way. We can do better. It is scandalous to waste the potential of the people of this community and our country.
They used to say that in Centralia, every day is payday. On the day I arrived, they were told this would be their last.
Who's been here more than 10 years? You've worked here more than 10? Who's been here more than 20 years?
She was here for 50 years.
It will be. It already is.
You know how we found out we were losing our jobs? The head of Leaf North America sends a videotape down to all the Leaf plants telling them how they're going to reorganize and stuff. Oh, by the way, we're shutting the Centralia plant down. A videotape.
And by the way.
Yeah.
When's the last time you had a strike here?
Never been on strike.
Never had a walkout.
Arbitration,
do you have any idea what kind of profit you were making here?
20-some million is what they said.
20 million here, just inside this building.
Profit.
And now what?
People are going to go off the deep end that lose their jobs in America. It happens all the time. Suicides will go up, divorce rates, people start beating their kids that normally wouldn't. People just lose it when they don't have an income or they have to go from making $10 an hour down to $5 an hour.
Right.
It's tough.
Is there, you know what he's talking about?
Yeah.
Yep. Are you worried about this?
Yeah. I'm a single mother.
That's going to affect them all of our families around here.
I can't buy a house or anything on $5 an hour.
Tell me something. I want to know what's going to happen to the United States of America when they downsize everything and we get down to where everybody is making minimum wage. Who's going to buy $30,000 cars? Who's going to buy homes? Who's going to buy this stuff? I want to know. And it's just going to be like a snowball effect, because then the automakers are going to be out of work. The construction people is going to be, who's got the money to buy it if we're all downsized to $4.75 an hour? When's it going to end?
The workers told me that the manager from Payday was still across the street in the factory, so I decided to pay him a visit.
Hey, he said he'd talk to you without the camera if you talked to him.
All right, I'll call him and you stay here. Okay?
Hi.
What is the message to the American worker? That if they come here and work hard and do well, and because of their hard work, the company does well, their reward is unemployment.
You know, if this place would have done better and would have made more profit, it would have had a quicker payback.
I mean, you're saying even if they had made a bigger profit here, the move would have been even quicker to get out of here.
You're right.
If the workers here had done a worse job, if the candy bar hadn't done as well, they might still be a candy bar plant here.
That's true.
That's insane.
Centralia, Illinois.
Payday back to Centralia where it belongs.
Payday in Centralia, I want my job back, insurance. I need it badly. Everybody else needs it badly. We all need our paydays.
We want our jobs back.
Yeah.
We need our jobs back.
The whole town needs these jobs back.
Thank you.
piece of the 1996 Michael Moore film, The Big One, based on his 1995 book and tour, Downsize This, and he was in Centralia, Illinois, where they had downsized Payday out of a plant. They were moving it elsewhere, out of the country. We're going to continue with comments from our panelists. Does anyone have anything they want to say right off on what we just saw relating to anything about it or entity? Okay, go ahead, Matthew.
Well, with all the downsizing that's happening, I mean, it's clear and clear that it's, you know, it's against democracy. It's anti-democratic because the way the system is set up in this country with capitalism, you know, you have to have choices, you know, and the way the system is set up is you have to have money to be able to have those choices. And with more and more downsizing, that's less and less choice you have. So, plain and simple, I think a lot of what Michael Moore has to say is that, you know, capitalism is very questionable as far as being democratic or supporting democracy.
Steven.
I hope we can focus on his current bestseller, which we came here to do, to review Dude, Where's My Country? Mm-hmm. Sure, Roger and Me was brilliant. He went around with a camera and got all these rich people to revel in their own crapulence because they thought this fat nobody from nowhere would never get a movie out, and what he did was put together a movie out of their things. I think we should focus on what he had to say this current book.
Rick? Oh, Matt's correct.
He's right on.
That capitalist system is not democratic and never has been. We're supposed to have political democracy. We've never had economic democracy. However, now, of course, based on the last election we had and the fact that until the 19-teens, senators, for instance, were appointed by state legislatures, the founding fathers really, except for the House of Representatives, did not want a democracy. Now, people say that the intent was a republic, not a democracy, but that's a distinction without a difference, since a republic is a representative democracy, and we really don't even have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and focusing on the book, Michael Moore touches on a lot of economic principles, a lot of profit-making by large corporations from the current war. And I hope we go into some of that.
Yes, war profiteering.
We're going to go into roll-in number two, if we can. This is also from The Big One. This is short, 90 seconds. We'll be back. We'll go with roll-in number two from Michael Moore, The Big One, 1996, written and directed by Michael Moore. Here we go. Trucker's heart gets
we haven't even touched on the central premise of Michael Moore's most recent
action. Which way it goes?
You know, you what?
I don't care which way it goes.
What is that?
I just don't have no interest in it.
You know, I wish we had a better choice, but, you know, we got to pick between, what would you call it, you know, between two evils.
Yeah. Or I call it the evil of two lessers. How are you guys doing with your jobs and stuff right now?
I work harder than I ever had to work in my life. Well, my kids are all growing up, and I got to work harder today than I did, you know, 20 years ago.
You got to pay your rent, your electric, your water, your gas, and food and clothes for your kids. And there's no money left.
At the end of the month,
no,
that's it.
There's nothing left.
Mm-hmm. And you're working two jobs.
Yeah.
And raising your kids.
Yeah. Got two little girls.
How do you do that? How do you work two jobs? How does that work out?
I work mornings at one and nights the other.
Every day?
Every day, just about.
When do you get to see your kids?
I don't. Not that often. On the weekends, on a Sunday, in the afternoon, because the fairway's not open, so.
On the weekends? That would be like if you're divorced. Yeah. You get to see them on the weekend.
And I'm not divorced. I mean, I'm married and have a husband, and I still don't get to see them because of, you know, the way it is in America. And around the world, it's just not fair.
Any words of advice to all the your fellow men?
Don't vote.
Don't vote.
Don't vote. You have to pick between them two. Don't vote.
Hey guys, do you get the feeling we're going to have like the lowest turnout ever in an election?
Yeah.
This is Osaka UC. That was Michael Moore, the big one from 1996, talking about talking at the Hungry Platter somewhere in Illinois on his way to St. Louis with ordinary folks who were saying, hey, what happened in the last generation? I'm working all the time. I'm making less money. I think that working all the time, making less money, keeping people off balance helps the forces in the political power structure that really want to completely change the economic situation, the political situation. And by the way, war, I think, actually helps the political power structure to do that as well. When you keep people off balance by having a war, especially one that isn't extremely serious, where the outcome isn't really in doubt but goes on forever, then people don't deal with the real issues. Downsizing, a declining standard of living. And I think that really that's why I'm juxtaposing Michael Moore then, Michael Moore now. Michael Moore's book really does focus on the current war, but he does so because he wants to get back to the real focus, which is what's happening to the country, hence the title, Dude, Where's My Country? We're going to take short comments. I know Stephen was burning to tell us what the real premise of the current book is. Maybe you can cast it in the light of where he's coming from generally.
Well, it's a big change for Michael Moore. He's always been a total radical who despised the Democrats as much as the Republicans. But in the current book, he's saying the Republicans' drive for one-party rule, world hegemony, utter environmental deregulation and everything means that we radicals like him and you guys, I hope, I don't know. Anyway, he's like, we got to work for the Democrats, whoever the Democratic candidate is. We've 4 more years of Bush. The total premise of his book is 4 more years of Bush would be utterly disastrous.
Mm-hmm. Rick?
I agree with that. I believe that we have to elect someone besides Bush. I mean, Orrin Hatch would seem like a liberal compared to this guy. I mean, you know, it's just total naked shamelessness almost. I mean, people thought that because he lost the popular vote, he would take it easy. Well, I think, you know, it's like giving in to a rabid dictator, even a rabid dog. The fact that he could steal the election and get away with it, and the people just, you know, fell in behind this. Well, that's just the way our system works. Guy that gets the most votes loses, so what, you know. I'll go have my beer. I think he's gone pressed way ahead with this radical right-wing agenda. I don't really think Bush is a radical right-winger himself. I mean, to have any kind of ideology presupposes that a man has some kind of intelligence. He really doesn't. So the fact of the matter is, you may have problems with the various individuals running for president. I personally would rather vote for Al Sharpton over George Bush, and I don't think a whole lot of Al Sharpton.
Well, you really made your point there, Rick, but hey, Michael Moore's point is that 4 more years of Bush would be disastrous to democracy.
Well, that's what I just said.
And he puts it out there in a really good way in the first chapter by posing 7 questions to George Bush, to George W. Bush. And the way he uses humor and the way he addresses George W. like directly, almost as if he's sitting in the same room with him. I think it's
what are those
well
7 questions? Your business relations with the Bin Laden family?
Right, yeah.
Why was it you shut down all the airspace on September 12th but permitted the Saudi Air Force to fly all around the country and pick up all the Bin Laden siblings who are hanging out here?
And allow them, and how the administration assisted those family members to leave the country to Paris.
Yeah, before the FBI could talk to them. So he really begins the book by talking about all the things that seem incredibly weird and fishy about 9/11 and as they relate to George Bush. We're going to go to the third Roland. We'll be back. We'll talk more about the 5 questions when we get back. And we'll start with Matthew.
7 questions.
Okay, rolling 3.
A week.
That's about $8,000 a year mm-hmm. after taxes. What do you want? What do you want? What do you hope the union will get you?
We're not asking
you know,
for,
we're not asking
hour,
for
we're just...
$15 an hour. We're not even asking for 10.
You'd be happy with?
Good God, 8.
Good luck.
Thanks
you very, very much. I really support you.
Thanks a lot.
And I'll do what I can to help you win.
We headed off to Rockford, Illinois, which, like my hometown of Flint, Michigan, had just been named by Money Magazine as the worst city in the country. Driving through Rockford, I realized there were other similarities to Flint. We had game show host Bob Eubanks. They had actress Susan St. James. Culturally, we had Grand Funk Railroad, and they had those I Want You to Want Me guys, Cheap Trick. Random House had arranged for me to speak that night at the local media play. Media Play was a sprawling complex that sold books, CDs, videos, and you could probably get a 10-minute lube job while you wait.
Which way to Home Appliances?
I was really excited to learn that Rick Nielsen, the lead guitarist from Cheap Trick, lived just down the road. So I asked Media Play's PR director, Pat, if she knew if he was in town. I think she was worried I was going to go off and hang with him, so she told me he was absolutely, definitely not in Rockford.
Why did I come to Rockford? I really wanted to go to some cities other than the ones they usually send authors to. New York, Los Angeles, Boston, Washington, right? The same old, and nobody ever comes to Rockford, right? And I know what that's like, because I lived in Flint most of my life. Nobody ever comes to Flint.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
How you doing?
Good, Mike.
Who's this to?
Laura.
L.A.
You are.
What do you do here?
What do I do?
Yeah.
I sell cars.
Yeah? What kind of cars?
Fords, and I got laid off today.
Today? Oh, sorry. Oh, and this just happened today. Do you have kids?
No, and I don't have kids, but, you know, I don't know how they expect the people I'm 30 to 45 to be able to support their parents with jobs that they don't have any benefits on these souls at minimum wage.
I'm really sorry. Can I give you a hug? I'll come over. I'm really, really sorry. So I tell you, every city I go to, every day, this is what's going on. You are not alone in this.
I know that, and that's why I'm glad that you're here, and just seeing that a lot to me.
There you go. Downsized, but not out.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. All right, hang in there, okay? Really, seriously, man, okay?
Thank you very much.
I'm really sorry.
Thanks for coming to number 300.
Fellow 300.
That's right. Good luck, Flint, Michigan.
All right, take care.
Any advice for, you came from the worst city in America.
Can you see Michael Moore, the big one, 1996, on the Downsize This book tour? The reason I'm showing it is the reasons that Michael Moore wants to get back to are that real people have lost their jobs, lost their standard of living in the United States, and this is normal now. It's normal for decline to be the experience for the normal person in the United States and has been for a generation, and that was his big point. Right now, his most recent book is trying to focus some attention on the war and that people need to get George Bush out of there, as Stephen said. And there are these 7 questions. But really, I think Michael Moore wants to get back to the real agenda, but he feels like Bush and the war has to be swept away first. Now, we're ready to hear some of these other 7 questions that haven't been covered yet. That he begins his book, most recent book, Dude, Where's My Country On? So, does anyone want to deal with 7 questions that haven't been dealt with so far?
Why was the intelligence ignored? The Mossad of Israel, France, Germany, field FBI officers were all saying there seems to be a plot at hand to hijack airliners and fly them into major buildings. Why was that utterly ignored? In fact, why was it ignored to the point where... The Air Force was told to stand down in the northeast sector on September 11, 2001, and why has Bush done everything he can to prevent a inquiry into the intelligence failures? Intelligence didn't fail. They knew it was coming, and they stood down because it gave them everything that they wanted. Well, and this book shows it fairly clearly in the form of questions.
Well, that is the first chapter of his
book. And everyone says,
book.
Oh, this is the most scandalous thing about Michael Moore's new book, is that he accuses the Bush administration of being complicit in September 11th. But the questions he asks, unless Bush can answer them, shows pretty clearly that he was complicit.
Mm-hmm. And he has a really good use of resources and citations throughout all the questions.
Footnotes up the yim yang.
Yep. And with his use of humor too, which is great, you know. And then
one of the questions he asks is why, when Bush was told about the attacks on the World Trade Center, why did he just stare into space for half an hour at that elementary school? And there are strange questions about the time and, why when these things are in the air and it's known that they're in the air and hijacked, why weren't jets scrambled and stuff like that? It's bizarre. It
when
is very
Payne
bizarre.
When Payne Weber's jet went awry, Payne Weber, that's the Wall Street guy.
Right.
Payne Stewart was the golfing guy. When his jet went awry over like Wyoming, within 20 minutes he had three fighter jets following him. And remember when they were watching on the news, they're going, oh, we'll shoot it down if it gets anywhere near a unpopulated area. And yet here, four commercial airliners go missing, even after France, Germany, and Israel all warn America to expect something just like this.
Well, I think,
and the Bush administration tells the Air Force to stand down.
The essential point is that it is extremely, extremely fishy. I mean, he doesn't directly say that Bush is complicit, but that it does seem to be the implication of his first chapter. And to say that that's, off the shelf as a question to ask Bush is ridiculous at this point, because anyone with half a brain knows that if you're president of the United States or leader of any nation state, one thing that you can really use is an external enemy to unite an otherwise disunited position at home. And what's more disunited of a position than George Bush not even being elected by a plurality of the vote and actually receiving less vote than Gore did in the general election that put him in the office of the president. And in fact, also, you have to remember that Bush is a skull and bones man from Yale, and one of the only things we know about the vault, the Yale skull and bones sort of fraternity house, is that in the pit, where they do their initiations, the vault of vaults, there's a like 6 foot high lettering on the wall that pretty much sums up this core secret philosophy of the group. And it's three letters, and it's war. Mm-hmm. And the story goes that the philosopher Hegel said that war was the organizing principle of a society.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was Machiavelli who said that war is the health of the state, or was that Leibniz?
Machiavelli didn't get past him. We're going to go into the next role in... That's Roland 4.
I think we gave some coffee this time.
Yeah, okay. Roland 4, Michael Moore, the big one.
5 minutes.
Here we go. Kind of...
Roland 4.
All right. Yeah, you're way too easy.
What the hell? We got an air raid going here.
That's the noon whistle.
That's the noon whistle? That's a frightening noon whistle. Does that happen every noon?
I think so.
What's the point of that?
I think it means that you can have lunch now.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I lived in a town like that.
Johnson Controls, whose worldwide headquarters are located in Milwaukee, announced today they are closing their Milwaukee Humboldt facility. Johnson Controls, a major supplier to the auto industry of engine parts, seat covers, and hydraulics, said the Milwaukee production is being moved to Mexico.
I'm just turn in right here.
What's the deal here? We're not going to get anything.
The deal is you never turn the camera off. That's the deal.
Never turn the camera off.
Ready? Everybody ready?
I'm on,
right?
What's going on right here?
I'd like to know that, too. I'd like to know what they did on the inside. I'm trying to stay out of the way of Johnson Controls. Actually, I heard a siren, and I thought maybe that had something to do with Michael, and so I decided I'd get into my car rather than being rousted by the police, but it was an ambulance going by.
Do you know why he went in to Johnson?
Well, I know that they are, that they've just laid off a lot of people, but I don't really know specifically what he was doing in there.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And you are?
I'm Bev Jerkowski.
And you're with?
Johnson Controls.
Do you know Mr. Keys, the chairman?
I do.
Yes? Well, I would like to present him with a check, a little gift for me. Going away present. Hi, how you
Hi.
Doing? I'm Michael Moore.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, I just brought a little present here for you.
Okay.
80 cents to pay the first Mexican worker for the first hour of work. This is what you'll be paying Mexicans down there, 80 cents an hour. And just to help out, you know, because, you know, I guess you're hitting, you've had hard times here, right?
We haven't had hard times.
No, you've only made $500 million in the last 3 years in profits.
Yeah, we our company is reasonably successful, and we're committed to continuing to be successful.
Then why would you leave Milwaukee if you're successful?
Because we need to remain competitive in our businesses, so...
You mean you want to be more successful, right?
We need to continue to be successful, that's right.
And the families here who will lose their jobs?
Families who are here will leave their jobs. We're going to do the best we can to help them out in making the transition.
To where, Mexico, or... The families are going to Mexico with you?
To either help them find other jobs at Johnson Controls or other good jobs for them going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so thanks very much.
Will you take this?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. 80 cents. I want you to give it to Mr. Keys.
Okay.
Is there any way I could meet him?
No, I'm afraid he's unavailable.
Because I have another present for him.
Okay.
This is the Downsizer of the Year Award. And you win it for Milwaukee. Each city that I'm in on my book tour, I'm giving out various downsizer awards to the companies that make millions in profits and then throw people out of work. And because you've done that here in Milwaukee, I want to thank you. Are you sure Mr. Keys won't see me?
Yeah, I'm afraid he's not available. And I'd like to request...
Here? He's here?
He's unavailable. I'm really not
sure. You should tell him I'm
here.
He'll know who I am.
I'm not sure.
He supplies GM.
I would like to request... that if you'd like to come back sometime, make an appointment, we can talk some more.
Oh, I'd be glad
but
to
But I'd like
appointment.
To request, and Jack, yes. If you could help me out, please.
Sure. Jack, how you doing?
We'd like
Michael
to have permission.
Moore. What's your job here?
Jack Higgins.
Jack, what do you do here?
Human resources.
That's always my favorite department, because they take care of the people here, right?
Okay.
The people that you're going to be laying off, right?
I've asked.
The human resources?
Well, it's not actually in my area, but yes, we will be doing that.
What does human resources do?
Okay, let's hold on. I think we've
well, you
had
brought Jack
discussion.
Out here to talk to us.
Jack came out to keep us coming. We've had our little discussion. Thanks very much for coming.
I wish you had
called to let us know, and maybe we would have been better prepared for your cameras and your show.
We wish you would have called and told all the workers so they would have been better prepared.
They were.
Yeah,
we've been talking with our employees continually.
They've known this for years, right, that you're going to be leaving here. Each year as you made a bigger and bigger profit, they knew you would leave Milwaukee because they did such a good job here. You made so much money.
I think our employees have got a much better understanding of what's happening than you do.
I have 20 years here coming in Friday, and we were told yesterday that the entire plant would be closed.
You know what's? You know where they're going to relocate, don't you?
Yes, it's going to Mexico. Reynosa, Mexico.
Once you're laid off, what's your plan?
I don't have one right now. I don't know. I have to see what my options are and go from there.
I asked Ed if he'd like to head over to Manpower Incorporated, the temp agency, whose world headquarters just happened to be located in Milwaukee. Manpower, a company that guarantees you a job for a day, was now the number one employer in the country.
So
We thought, seeing how this is such a great company, you know, maybe we could get Ed a temp job.
You know, I want to thank you for stopping by, and I wish I could help you further at this point, but you took me by surprise, and I'd like to find out more about the situation.
How about just an application for Ed to get a temp, just a temp job?
Please.
No? Milwaukee was a great base for manufacturing, and there's really nobody left. And now we were one of the biggest companies around here, and now we're going, so I don't know what we're going to do.
Welcome back to Host Taking UC. You saw some more of Michael Moore's The Big One. Well, why show that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because I think that the war, which is largely the subject of Moore's most recent book, Dude, Where's My Country, just came out this year. The thing about it is that the war is really running interference for this agenda that you see was Moore's focus in this film. The agenda is to globalize the economy, which actually also puts a lot of pressure on wages in the United States, which third worldifies the United States, even at the same time that the U.S. economy becomes third worldified by going overseas with its physical plant. There's been a lot of complaint about that. There certainly was up to the time of the war, but then it left the radar scopes of the major mass media at that point. So that's why I'm bringing it up again. Now, we have panelists here who really want to tell you about this most recent book, and so here we go. Go ahead there, Steve. Let us have it.
Well, there was some stupid European philosopher who said war is the health of the state. I remember Shakespeare's Henry IV explaining to his son that when you have trouble at home, get yourself into a foreign war and that'll take care of it, type thing. And that does seem to be what Bush has done. You know, he did everything he could to prevent a inquiry into what happened on 9/11. The economy was falling apart. And then we had our own local favorite son, what was named the Dark Lord, William Seedman. Didn't you used to live in one of his houses? Going, don't worry, the economy will be much better once we get our hands on all that Iraqi oil. Yeah, war is the health of the state. And the health of the state is the health of the ruling class.
He said that in September, a year ago, this past September. He said that having control of Iraq's oil would really help the U.S. economy. Matthew, you have something to say about this.
Well, yeah, and look at all the military hardware that gets, you know, constructed to fuel the war and all the companies involved. Michael Moore goes into the situation in Afghanistan as well in his book with these big companies like, yeah, Halliburton, Dick Cheney's old company, still around. But the Unocal thing, too, which I remember hearing about, you know, right after the war started, or with Afghanistan,
right,
about how Unocal, you know, has plans and is working on building a pipeline across Afghanistan. But, you know, I think it's important as we get closer to this next election for people to really discuss these issues, discuss capitalism, you know, to take a stand against it, to say, you know, are you for it or against it? You know, decide if you're for capitalism or against capitalism, because
We're open for calls. We can start showing our call-in number. This is a call-in show. It's live. This is the 17th of December here in Grand Rapids.
I don't think
elsewhere.
We need to make it a referendum on capitalism. I think we need to make it a referendum on democracy.
Mm-hmm.
If you want the Fourth Amendment, if you want the First Amendment... Then
very true.
Anyway, Rick, what do you think?
Well, as I said earlier, the whole premise of capitalism is not democracy at all. It's economic, if I could say, totalitarianism. I mean, the boss is your boss. You lose literally your rights under the Constitution when you enter a workplace, as a rule. Mm-hmm. They can monitor everything you do. I know my sister works for the post office, and they actually monitor how long it takes a person to go to the restroom. And they're just constantly acting like the Gestapo. And that is a government agency. I mean, Lord knows what's going on in these private sector, non-unionized places.
Mm-hmm.
But the real key here is I would slightly disagree with Mark on the reason for the war. I mean, the premise for this war was actually drawn up by a group called the Project for a New American Century way back in the first Bush administration.
Paul Wolfowitz.
And, of course, also the war, I think, was needed to take away the to take people's attention away from the fact that George Bush did not really win the election. He stole the election. And what better way to get behind a man who lost the election by saying, well, he may have stolen the election, but, you know, he's protecting us against bin Laden and those terrorists now. No, he's not. If he did, it never would have happened. As Steve said, they had intelligence. Now, they didn't have the exact day or the exact location or the exact time of day, but when Condoleezza Rice, for instance, says they could not have conceived that people would hijack airplanes and use them as guided missiles and skyscrapers, that's wrong.
Simply
wording,
untrue.
Wording to that effect was almost exactly that in a memo that crossed her desk.
The Romans, I mean the Germans, knew it was coming, and they told us, and the French and the Israelis too.
Okay, we have a caller. Steve, go ahead with your question or comment. Steve, thanks for calling. Steve? Caller, Steve?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Man, why don't we just kill all them rich people, man? I've had it. Just drag them out of their houses and put bullets in their heads.
I don't think he's very serious about that.
I'm serious, dude. That's the only way this is going to change, if we kill him. You can sit around and talk all you want.
Nah, man.
There's
rich,
a lot of people
I don't
to
think
kill.
That's going to go very
what about all the
violence,
evil politically?
Violence begets violence.
What about all the evil
people?
We
want
to break the vicious circle, dude.
Yeah.
Break the vicious circle.
Not anything. If they own
Find
property.
Some compassion in your heart,
property,
man.
It's Christmas.
I can't hear you.
Kill them if they own property, man. That's the only way. Private property, man. We got to kill all the people that own stuff.
Yeah.
What?
You guys are right on. Man.
You're not even serious.
You guys are right on. You guys are right on.
We want to look for alternatives, you know.
I would say
we're all about alternatives.
I think that's either an extreme leftist or an extreme rightist calling in.
All I want is a society where everyone who can work has work, and everyone who can't work has enough friends that they don't have to die in the gutter.
And the work that gets done is really work that needs to be done.
I don't want to kill the rich people. I don't even want to necessarily take away their pretty clothes and jewelry and stuff. Yeah. I just want them to stop fucking with my democracy. Can I say that on cable?
Well, you just did.
Against our policy. I've got to say that this group does not advocate
killing anybody?
Attacking the wealthy, killing anyone. In fact, this is not even a socialist group at this point. It's
apparently not.
Years ago,
that's its problem.
He says that's its problem. We have another caller. Ed, your question, your comment? Go ahead. Thanks for calling. Ed?
Yeah. What bothers me a bit about the earlier discussion, and take this as just friendly difference of opinion, but I don't think you can legitimately conclude from the consequences of 9/11, which there's no question the Bush administration shamelessly, immorally exploited it and has utilized it to its fullest advantage to promote its program. The opposition, therefore, becomes you're linked up with the terrorists, etc. But from that, it's difficult to conclude that 9/11 was preordained or facilitated by the administration, as it is much easier to demonstrate that with, for example, the kinds of policies and actions that the Bush administration has worked on and promulgated from the first days of its administration, that you could see this was on an agenda. I mean, for example, ergonomic protection of workers, repetitive motion injuries. The Department of Labor had worked for 10 years, and in that first month of the Bush administration, that was withdrawn. And we could go on. The Kyoto Warming Treaty, pulling out of that. We can look at the tax giveaways. All these took a lot of open effort on the part of the administration to achieve. And you're on firmer ground, I think, if you look at the Bush, how it has implemented an agenda. And it's used the war on terror to implement that agenda. But the fortuitous event of 9/11 to argue from the consequences of that the Bush administration took advantage of it, to argue that the Bush administration caused it, is arguing backwards in terms of causality. It's sort of like saying the sun was created so we could have a tan. The sun was...
Yeah. You know, okay, let's imagine that the Bush administration was not complicit in permitting 9/11 to go forward, even though they ignored all the intelligent evidence, even though they've done everything to block inquiry into it. Your point is well taken. They have used it to their political advantage to cover their asses when it comes to all these other terrible things they intend to do to you and me.
And they will continue to do so, I mean, with the capture of Saddam, too. You know, that's a huge political booster. And we all know Osama bin Laden will be found. I mean, I think they know where he's at already, you know, but they're going to time that out.
Yeah.
And find him before the next election, sometime next summer.
I don't think it's a sure thing that they're going to want to have bin Laden, because if they ever even do get bin Laden, then
war is over.
Then the 50-year war might not be able to happen with them chasing bin Laden from oil patch to oil patch for 50 years, or son of bin Laden too, or something.
It sure would boost an election, though. I mean, if it happens,
I suppose. Yeah. But
they'll find somebody they call bin Laden.
I think it's much more reasonable to call it a kind of semi-conspiracy of incompetence rather than direct conspiracy, a semi-conspiracy of incompetence to screw up the mechanisms, the normal mechanisms of intelligence and counterintelligence, counterterror, is much more untraceable and much more likely, especially given all the political benefit in terms of the whole thrust to take over the whole major new oil patch of the world in the former Soviet Union.
And institute things to take away
focus on the environment, which is really falling the heck apart really fast because of the oil focus and not going to alternative fuels, which is another point that Moore makes very heavily in his book, that we're really having a terrible trauma with the environment, and that is going unnoticed and unseen by the media during all this.
I want to respond. I don't think there's any such thing as a semi-conspiracy. That's like being semi-pregnant. There's either a conspiracy or not. And the idea
that
Ed was coming around with, that you can't think... It's like some people don't think the word conspiracy exists in the dictionary. It does exist. And there are no coincidences in politics. Things happen for a reason. If this was a coincidence, it was a hell of a coincidence. It has been the primary linchpin upon which George Bush has built his administration. Those things just don't happen. And, you know, deal with it. There are conspiracies. Don't be afraid that if you're an atheist, that somehow you think that conspiracies can't exist because they're being driven by somebody called Satan that you don't believe in.
Okay, we have another caller, Bob, and then we're going to go into the final roll-in and skip one of the others. Okay, Bob. Your question, your comment.
Yeah,
thanks,
why don't you guys just go get jobs?
Okay, thanks, Bob. You're out of here.
Job.
We're going to go to the last roll-in.
I want a job, Bob. You know any jobs?
Okay,
yeah,
we're going to the last roll-in. I don't really feel
like to work.
Responding to such an off-the-wall kind of insipid comment. Okay.
Like straight out of the 50s or something.
Yeah. Okay, you know, that's part of what Moore's points, anyway, is that the jobs are disappearing and that this war helps to disguise that fact. Okay.
And the jobs don't pay enough.
We can't hear that.
That song of the 30s of the Flint sit-down strike of labor, the CIO, seated next to Michael Moore. Now, many of you know who Michael Moore is. And Michael Moore's new book is called Downsize This, down random threats from an unarmed American. And so just in hearing this passage from this old labor song of the 30s, what thought comes to your mind immediately?
I think of my Uncle Laverne, actually, who was in that sit-down strike 60 years ago this winter, Studs. And I think about, how all of us gained from that and all other labor actions that came after that, how the standard of living, how our health care, Social Security, child labor, all these things came as a result of the struggle that those people participated in. And if they could see what's going on now...
We come to the big subject. We hear the phrase today, since the evil empire is gone, they have a new enemy called terrorists. And so you have a picture at the beginning of this book, downsize this, two photographs. What is terrorism? And it's almost, two photographs almost identical, destroyed buildings. The first one's Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, 1995, after the bombing. Down below, Flint, Michigan, 1996. And you can hardly tell the difference. The two pieces of destruction. So the question is, what is terrorism?
Well, obviously, if you park a Ryder truck in front of a building filled with explosives and blow up that building and kill 168 people, that's an act of terrorism. There's no question about that. But what do you call it, Studs, when you politely remove the people from the building first and then blow it up? But in the ensuing years, the people that used to work in that building, because their livelihood has been stripped from them, the people that used to work there, a number of them will die. They'll die from suicide. They'll die from spousal abuse. They'll die from drugs and alcoholism. All the social problems that surround people when they become unemployed. Those people are just as dead as the people in Oklahoma City. But we don't call the actions of the company terrorism, do we? We don't call the company a murderer. But I do consider this an act of economic terrorism when at a time you're making a record profit, you would throw people out of work just so you can make a little bit more.
Yeah. Good clip. You just saw some more Michael Moore, Downsize This. No, actually, that was the Downsize This book tour from 95, 96, and that was the 96 film release of The Big One. And he was talking about economic terrorism, the terrorism of what's happened to the United States in this past generation, the decline in the standard of living, the loss of the physical plant of the U.S. economy overseas. And his most recent book, I think one of his main points is that the war on terror is a big distraction from the much more damaging effects of the war, the class war, against most of the people in the United States. Now we have some time for our panelists to draw their own conclusions, whatever they may be, to this.
I have to say, Studs Terkel, it is so cool that Studs Terkel, in his 90s, is still fighting the class war on the side of us guys. Even though he's made his money, he could join the other side anytime he wants.
Yeah, and linking together like labor history, you know, what happened back then is still a part of what's happening today. The economic terrorism that's happening today, and just to emphasize the point of solidarity, that the way that we're gonna to fight this war that's being waged against us, this economic terrorism against everybody. Everybody's impacted. So I think that basic platform is for people just to say, first off, like, yeah, this affects me. Even though, you know, people may not be on the streets, they may not have lost their jobs or whatever, to look at how rising costs and how wages and benefits are falling, how that affects them and how to incorporate it in their own lives, and then how they can, see commonplace things of how it's affecting everybody. So ask those questions, you know.
Rick.
Bush must go.
Yeah, I think that a very strong point that Moore makes in his most recent book, Dude, Where's My Country, this year, is that really Bush has to go. If Bush doesn't go, we're in so much trouble environmentally and economically we really do run the risk of losing the republic. A lot of people have essentially lost their ass in terms of the standard of living and their jobs already. And as he says, this could be considered an economic terrorism, a kind of an economic strain and drain that could be, really is more damaging than terrorism, because if you really look at the actuarial situation, terrorism is really not dangerous in the long term and in the whole to the country as a whole. Much more dangerous is what's happening to the environment, what's happening to the economy, what's happening to people's minds as they lose their country, as they lose their jobs. We have a caller, L.A. Dave. Go ahead, L.A. Dave.
We've got a Walter.
We've got Walter instead. Okay, Walter, your question, your comment. Welcome to OSIC and UC. Walter. Okay, goodbye, Walter.
What I liked with Michael Moore was one of the things Michael Moore in the chapter... where he was talking about the religious aspect of the whole thing. He made fun of George Bush for going around saying, God wanted me to be president. God wanted me to be president. And Michael Moore has a chapter in The Voice of God going, don't blame me for his being president. I did everything I could to prevent him from being president, including making sure that he lost the election.
Yeah. We're going to deal with this book in future shows as well. And I've got to say that the chapter Jesus W. Christ really deals with this strange connection between George Bush and the far religious right wing of Protestant religion, where people are saying that George has the light of God upon him, and he really plays to that too, but which is one hell of a distraction from what's really going on in this country.
It's very similar to George Bush's always pretending that Iraq was behind 9/11.
But a point to be made there is those same people didn't seem to think it was God's will that Bill Clinton was elected twice. And I wonder if they think Adolf Hitler, if you want to believe that everything that happens is God's will, then obviously Hitler taking power was God's will. 9/11 was God's will. We can go on and on with that nonsense, you know.